We continue the Shiur in Sichas Taran, Sif Kuf Mem Tes, paragraph 149, which deals with the story of the Zion Betlas, the 13th final story, which, as Abinazar said, was the most important, the highest story ever told, and one that contains all the secrets of the Torah and of creation from the beginning of time to the end. We cannot go through the synopsis fully, just very briefly that we're dealing with two children who were lost in the woods, and they grew up, they got married. While they were in the woods, starving, seven beggars came to them in succession, one after the other. Each betler apparently seemed to have a physical defect. The first one was blind, the second one was deaf, third one stammered, fourth one, his neck was out of joint, fifth was hunchback, sixth was without hands, seventh without legs. Each one of these seven gave a bracha, a blessing to these children. They also gave them food, bread. The children grew up, there was a wedding, large wedding, this chasen kala. At the time of the wedding, the Chasen and Kala recalled the incident with these seven betlers, these seven beggars, and they yearned very strongly, they yearned and cried for the reappearance of these betlers. During the 7 days of feasting, Shivas Yemei HaMishteh, after the wedding, each day a different one of these betlers appeared. Now these seven betlers, as we explained very clearly, were seven, represented seven greatest tzaddikim possible. Actually, the seven betlers were one. The tzaddik emes was comprised of all these seven in one. For example, speaking of Ze'er Amten, who was the Shishak Tzavos and the Malchus, the Teres Bala. So when he is complete with the Nukvah, is one, it contains the qualities, the Kedusha of all seven. So naturally, it goes without saying that the Tzaddik Emes who told this story knows about the secrets of these seven betlers, is naturally the one who was these seven betlers in one. And we have the first story of the blind betler who actually showed that he was not blind at all, had the greatest eyesight possible. Just he did not waste the power of his eyesight to look at the mundane, base things in this world that do not count at all. And he proved that he lives long life. Because his life is truly long, the story that he told about the great eagle, which proved this point, this bracha of long life he now gave as a gift to the Chasen and Kala. That was on the first day. The story up to the second day, when again the Chasen and Kala craved and yearned for the appearance of the second betler, the deaf betler, who, when they cried, the tears brought into existence, or appeared in front of them, the second betler. He said to them, "You think that I am deaf. In truth, I'm not deaf at all. I'm only deaf to the material items that exist in this world. The words that are spoken in this world are all words of suffering. People who complain about the shortage of material benefits, of wealth, I don't listen to that at all. To those words, I am deaf." Nosselow explains that the reason why he said the world is filled with chesvenus, shortages. Every person complains about lacking something. The whole world is one big complaint. The lack of something, in fact, to understand the words of this betler, it was that each person lacks emunah, faith. If he would have faith, he'd find that he lacks nothing at all. There's nothing missing because everything that a person needs is really there. Everything that happens to a person is for his benefit because it is given to him by Hashem. And from Hashem there comes only good. Whatever a person has is good. There is nothing lacking if that person has the true degree of emunah ishlemus, complete emunah. Why then? What is this? The reason for this shortage? Why do people complain? Because there is a lack of true faith. Each person has something missing due to the amount of faith that is lacking, that which is missing from perfection in emunah. Therefore, we find that those who complain most are those machakrim, the philosophers, the ones who criticize the world, the ones who criticize everything in it, the ones who bemoan everything that exists. They will find fault with everything. They'll show there's no pleasure possible. They suffer throughout their entire lives. And this is because in philosophy there lies the deepest degree of kefida, lack of emunah, Chumon al-Islam. Now, a person who has this philosophy, this lack of emunah, cannot find any happiness in life. That person who avoids this kefida, he lives with simplicity and pure faith, can find simcha, satisfaction, in the midst of the worst suffering, the highest degree of suffering. You'll find that a person who has emunah is very happy. There's something wrong, he smiles, he sings, and he says it's all good because Hashem is good and Hashem will complete whatever is necessary. So this person with emunah is always happy. That's why the Rabbeinu Zal stressed so much the mitzvah of simcha. Very big mitzvah, the Rabbeinu Zal said, to be besimcha always. Why a very big mitzvah? Which is a mitzvah that is very big? When we find the word big, kol mitzvah secha emunah. Biggest mitzvah is the combination of all mitzvahs, which is emunah, and that is achieved by simcha. It goes hand in hand with simcha. And this second betler said, because of the fact that I do not listen to the complaints of this world, therefore I live a very good life. Note the difference. The first betler said I live a very long life. The second betler said I live a very good life. A good life of satisfaction, of happiness, without anything lacking. And this good life of mine is that I eat bread and drink water. The Tanya says, Hashem said, if you obey the mitzvahs of Hashem, if you obey these mitzvahs, you be loyal to Hashem, what is the blessing, Hashem said? I'll give you gold. I'll give you diamonds. No, I'll give you a blessing. I'll bless your bread and your water. I'll give such a blessing into the bread and water that you have, that by eating this bread, you will avoid every type of disease or sickness or depression of mind. The bread and water will be blessed. This is the good life of this betler. Described as good life, he said, because he eats bread and water. Then he said, there is a country where there is a lot of wealth. And this wealth that they have, of course, treasures, these treasures, he meant to imply, were spiritual treasures. Treasures beruchnius. The very wealthy people, which means wealth beruchnius, very holy people, these tzaddikim, once got together. Each one started to speak about, describe the good life of his, meaning the high degree of spiritual life, of purity, that he achieved. Because if you're going to speak about good life, you cannot speak about the good life of Gashmius. There is nothing good about Gashmius, unless it is coupled with, subservient to, Ruchnius. The body is good only when it serves the neshama. If a person does a lot of workout, physical workout, and builds up body muscles, and these body muscles are used to commit sins with, that's not a good body. It's a very evil kind of a body, a very sick kind of a body that does not serve its purpose. A good body is one, no matter how weak it is physically, if that body is used to serve Kedusha, a body that is tormented in fasting, and suffering because of the sake of performing mitzvahs, that's the healthiest body that exists, the purest one. These treasures they spoke about, they live a good life. Each one described the good life that he lives, the Ruchnius. Each one spoke about the description of his good life. And this second Betler said, I spoke up and I said to them, I live a Chaim Tevim, a good life that is better, superior, all the good lives you describe. And I have proof. Of course, I would not boast this without proving my point. I have proof that I challenge you, if you really live a life of such goodness, such purity, let's see if you can help. You can rescue, there's a certain land which is in a sad dilemma. Try to rescue them, save them from the problem, this dilemma they're suffering from. This land is one that has a garden. In this garden, there are special fruits that are so extraordinary. These fruits contain every type of taste that exists in the world. Also, every type of reach, of smell, every kind of odor, aroma, and these are pleasant aroma that exists also, and also every type of color, various types of rich colors, appearance, beauty, every type of beauty that exists is found in this garden. The garden has a caretaker, a special gardener who tends to this garden, who sees that the garden remains clean and pure and is productive in all its beauty, in all its greatness. The people in that land lived a good life through this garden, a life of perfection. First, what is meant by this garden? The Zohar Kodesh says that there is a special garden, the special garden, that's Gan Eden, in heaven, which it comes forth that which is perfect in both reach, smell, taste, and appearance, looks. Looks meaning different, various types of colors. These, of course, so we won't go into detail, of course, this pertains to the different spheres. But it means all the various aspects of the Ruchnius, the spiritual, come from Gan Eden. How? How does this benefit the world, the people in the world? Because this comes forth in a form of a light, special oil. It's the oil of Torah, the light of Torah, which shines forth from this garden, Gan Eden, this Garden of Eden. And this light comes down to the world and nourishes spiritually the neshamas of every single person, every Jew. But how is this light directed? You have to move this light. You have a powerful spotlight. You want to shine it at something. It's got to be, there must be directed for it. This is guided by the Tzaddik Emes. The Tzaddik is the one who holds this light, directs it at, and injects it into each person who's prepared to receive this, to absorb the sacred, the holy rays of this light. This is the Tzaddik Emes, who was the side, the connection between Gan Eden and the people, the Neshamas in this world. He is the gardener, because the Neshamas are like plants that grow in this, all the Neshamas come, grew, were planted in this Gan Eden. They were sent down to earth, and of course they must sustain their life through this light of Gan Eden, which keeps them alive. Given to them with the power of this gardener, the Baal HaSoda, who is the Tzaddik Emes. This is what the second Bet Levin telling you about, the special place where the garden was, and they received the light of this garden, which was for them the Chayim Tevim, perfect life, through this gardener. Now he related that one day this gardener was lost. Somehow they lost the gardener, which means, of course, that doesn't mean physically. It means that suddenly the light of the tzaddik became hidden, became oyed hanelon. It was hidden from the world due to something which blocked or blotted out the light of the tzaddik. Naturally, a person wants to receive this light, he must have emunah. If one does not believe in the tzaddik emes, he cannot receive any good from the tzaddik emes. Or if a person listens to evil talk of one who was a misnagid, who was in opposition to tzaddikim, naturally, this will block him from receiving nourishment, the yinika, from the tzaddik emes. So in this land, something happened which caused this gardener to become lost. And they were left without the gardener, which meant then that everything in the garden was now forced to become spoiled. The light was cut off, the growth in that garden was stopped, since there was no gardener to tend to it, and they could no longer receive the nourishment either of the fruits of that garden. Though there was still enough, the part of those plants, that the initial part that falls off from the plants and itself takes root by itself without being planted, is enough for that if one would want to seek to draw from that to find also the beauty of this garden, which of course means that one, even after the tzaddik emes is hidden, if one searches for his light truly, he could find it hidden there within his writings or from his hidden students. But the fact was that they did not, and they lost out. What caused this? A very evil, sadistic king came to this land, and he found that he could not hurt them at all. He could not harm them, because there was no way he could do them harm. They lived a life of happiness and purity, a good life. So he decided there is one way he could overcome them, by destroying, by hurting the good life of this land that they derive from this garden. Now, it's not that he actually spoiled the garden, because he could not, this evil king, could not really do harm to the spiritual powers of the garden. The Sfidas of Kedusha cannot be harmed directly, but he could do harm in the connection, the tie between these Sfidas and the people. And this he did. Again, we go back to this in the story form rather than the Kabbalah terms. This he did by leaving behind him three groups of his followers, his servants. He commanded these three groups, told them what they should do, and through this they would destroy the marvelous taste, the unequal taste that came from this garden. So that the result would be, if a person wanted to taste anything of the unusual taste they had till then, they would have only the taste of nevela. Nevela means a dead animal, an unkosher dead animal, not one that was slaughtered kosher, a tomei animal who dies by himself and is called nevela. Everything would have the taste of nevela, chas v'shalom, instead of the usually good taste, the pleasant taste that existed before. And so too, he also spoiled this aroma, the combination of pleasant aromas that emanated from this garden, so that from that time on, whenever a person would smell anything, everything would have the smell of chelbana. Chelbana is that spice which has a very bad smell. There are 11 spices in the ketedus. The ketedus is the highest of all the sacrifices, placing these special 11 spices. It's used daily, and especially in Kippur. These 11 spices, 10 are the pure spices. There's also mixed in the spice of chelbana, which is one of very bad smell. And of course, we once explained, as the Gemara says, the reason for this is to tell us that ketedus is the holiest korban, despite the fact that it has this chelbana, this bad-smelling spice in it. What does that teach us? That a minyan is the highest level of kedusha. Because without a minyan, you can have 9 of the greatest tzaddikim in the world, upper, top-level tzaddikim in the entire world. 9 of them together They cannot say Baruch Hu, they cannot say Kedusha, they cannot say Kaddish, they cannot read the Torah. If you have 10 people, even ordinary ones, they can say all these, the top of the Kedusha of Tefillah. All these different facets of Tefillah can be said by a minion of 10. And these 10, of course, are minion that are great. But if you have a regular minion of 10 people, 10 kosher Jews, and then along comes one Jew who is bad, he's a Russia, he's evil, he wants to join this minion. Is his tefillah accepted? Of course. Once he joins a minion, no matter what he is, alone his tefillah will be worthless. It has a bad smell to it. Bad smell means it's filled with sins. These sins are a foul odor. But this person with his foul odored sins, if he joins a minion, his tefillah goes right up together with the rest of it. That's why the Torah says, if you want to bring this ketanis, the highest degree of kedusha, in a sacrifice, Hashem shows, I want chelbana included, to teach you that even the worst Russia can join a group, a quorum, a minion of 10, and his tefillah is accepted also. But if you have this chelbana alone, it's an unbearable odor. And this is what the king did. Second group of slaves and servants destroyed or spoiled, contaminated the smell from that garden, and brought about the fact situation where everything they smelled had the smell of chelbana, an unbearable odor. So too they destroyed or spoiled, they harmed the sight, the vision, the looks of things, the appearance, the colors, that everything became dark. Their eyes became darkened as though there were clouds. Their eyes became cloudy, though there were clouds in front of them. This is what brought to the Shavu of Macharei Goshen. Clouds, tears, cause a blinding of the eyes. These rain clouds are the tears that can do harm to the eyes. These clouds were what the slaves, these servants, brought about to darken the light of the eyes. They could not see anything of beauty anymore. All this was done by this evil king. This is the story told by the second Betler. Now the second Betler concluded and said, now, if you claim, this group of Sadiqim claim that you live a good life, let us see if you can help that land. Help them by curing their situation. They've lost the power of taste, smell, and sight. Your life is that good. See if you can contribute some of your good life to them. Return to them their former good life. But I tell you, he continued, as Betler said to these Sadiqim, that if you cannot help them, if you're powerful enough to help them, good. If you cannot help them, then you'll find that they will spoil your good life in turn. Either you help them, or else if you're powerless to help them, then your good life will become spoiled too, as theirs was. Now, the Gemara says, this we could understand, the words of the Gemara, that there is a Russia, an evil person sometimes, who is so powerful that somehow there is no obstacle in his path. All his opposition falls away before him. One of those lines, you have certain times to show him, whether it's an evil country, whether it's an evil group, an evil individual, who is successful. They're successful and they're evil, they do harm, and it seems there's no stopping them. It's an avalanche which cannot be stopped. In the path of this avalanche, there are many victims. Even Sadiqim, too, this Russia can swallow up, destroy even Sadiqim. So great is his fortune, so powerful is his evil. Gemara says, when the Torah says that even a tzaddik he can swallow up, this means a tzaddik who is not perfect. He is a tzaddik, but not a perfect tzaddik. Tzaddik she'ein gomor. But he does not have the power to swallow up, to destroy a tzaddik gomor, a complete, perfect tzaddik gomor. That is not the power. This is what this second Betler said to them. If you can help them, that means if you are a tzaddik gomor, you'll be able to help them. because the harm done there will not affect you. But if you're not a tzaddik gomer, you're going to combat this evil, you're taking a big risk, because you too can be engulfed by this flood of evil, and you'll have your chayim tevim destroyed also. And so these wealthy people of that land went along with this second betler, the wealthy people, the tzaddik, and went along with him towards that land. And on the way, each one lived this good life, which means they studied Torah, they davened, they did their mitzvahs, they had all these treasures with them. When they came, they did this because they wanted to strengthen themselves, to purify themselves. Much as they did, they came close to that land, just close to it, not entering it. They began to feel that everything was becoming spoiled. The taste was becoming spoiled. The other items, the smell, the vision, each one felt that it was becoming spoiled. So the betler said to them, if now that you have not even entered yet into this land, you already feel the spoilage, you already feel the damage that you're suffering, imagine then, how could you expect to go in there? How do you expect to enter into the land itself, if even from a distance it affects you? Therefore, meanwhile, he said, I will help you. You have been affected now. He took some of the bread and water, he gave it to them. They began to feel in this bread and water all the taste and smell and beauty that existed. That which was spoiled was now corrected, perfected. But they waited there. They could not enter into that land. Meanwhile, at this same time, simultaneously, the people in the land, where this garden was, it was close to them now, began to study their situation. Began to realize that something went wrong. The liberals had taken over the land, had spoiled everything that was good, had destroyed a land where there was perfect law and order and peace, contentment, happiness. Now everything had, the taste was gone. People could feel no taste in education, in work. There was complete destruction, devastation. We had to realize that something had gone wrong someplace. Now, what is the solution? How do they go about correcting something? Is this a cancerous situation? There's no possibility of curing it. Is this land already destroyed? Or is there some means of correcting all the damage that was done? They decided, at least they thought about it. When they thought, they had a desire for correcting it, and the thought came to them. He said that the solution could be found, most probably, there is a land of very wealthy people, and by going to that land, then perhaps we can find a solution to our problem. So they said, let's go to these tzaddikim, let's tell them about the fact that our gardener is lost, because we know that our gardener actually stemmed from, his origin was from that land of those wealthy people. He came from there. And surely, if so, those people could help us. This they did. They sent messengers from that land to the land of these wealthy people, which means to this place of these tzaddikim. And as the messengers came out of that land, they started their journey, they met these wealthy people right there who were coming to meet them. There was a shortcut, and these tzaddikim asked the messengers where they were going. They replied, we're going to the land of these wealthy people to help us. So they said, we ourselves are from that land. We are those wealthy people. We're those tzaddikim you're seeking. And in fact, we're going to you to help you. So the deaf betler spoke up and said to them, to these messengers, you need me. I'm the one that you need to help you, because these other tzaddikim cannot do any good for you. They're not powerful enough. Therefore, I suggest that the tzaddikim remain here. I will go alone, enter into this land, and see what is necessary to correct the situation. Continue the story to this Chassan and Kalan said, so I went with these messengers, I went into the land, and I began to study what was going on. I went from one city to the next, And there I saw, I observed very closely, and I saw that there were a group of people who were speaking, and in speaking they made some kind of a joke. Then afterwards another group made another kind of a joke. And people gathered around to listen, they made more jokes, they were smiling and laughing, and seemed to be very amusing. People are enjoying themselves. This I could see from far. But I came closer, I listened more closely to what they were saying, and I found that this enjoyment was, the jokes they were speaking were colored jokes, profanity. In Hebrew it's called nivul peh, unclean language. These jokes were all nivul peh, contaminated words. This one was saying one kind of nivul peh in a very light sense, where the word was a double entendre, two meanings to it. Could be taken two ways. The second one said it still more delicately. They'd laugh about this. They'd have more pleasure. They'd go still further. The third would be more daring. So I went from further on to a different city. I had seen one thing now. I went further and I found another case. I'd see two people who were arguing very vehemently about a certain business matter, partnership or a business transaction, and they couldn't get together on this, so they decided to go to a court. The court should rule, decide their case. They came to a court, and the court heard both sides. The judges ruled that this one is right, and this one is guilty, he's wrong. They walked out of that court, and they began to discuss the court's ruling. They began to argue about this again. They said they don't like the decision of the court. Neither one liked it. Even the person who said he was right felt they did not give him all the right that he deserved. The second one said, I'm not wrong. They decided to go to a second court. They selected a second court in a different place, and they came before that court. They received a decision. Again, they argued about this decision. They went to a third court, and so they continued on, selecting different courts one after the other until the whole city was filled with courts, judges. And the question is why? Why should there be so many trials, such a repetition of trials? I looked closer, I observed, and I found the fact was there was no truth there. There was no honesty. That this one would listen more closely, would favor one party, the second would favor a second party. This was due to the fact that they would take bribes. Taking bribes, naturally, they would bend the truth. So there was no truth. The entire court system was fraudulent. They favored one type of minority, regardless of what the true judgment was, because of bribes, because of political considerations, and so there was no justice whatsoever in that land. Then I went further, and I saw that the city had become filled with pornography, with evil, with zanut, and it was so prevalent that it became as though it was permissible, which means there was a degree of permissiveness. Note how Benazel's story reaches a point in history where you see, you live through a period like this, this evil, bitter period. All this comes to life. And it reached the point where there was no stopping this. Everyone joined in. Everywhere there were places that sprang up, places, illegal places, that drew people to this, became victim to this evil habit. And I said to these messengers, after studying this, I said to them, this Bedler said, the reason that this happened is because they became spoiled. The taste, the smell, and the good looks, the appearance, that came from this garden. How? This evil king had left over three groups of servants. They should go out into the land and they should spoil these three items first by speaking nivel peh, that's profanity, unclean language, and by speaking nivel peh, the word nivel is the word nevela. This would spoil the taste. A person who speaks such kind of talk loses all sense of good taste. Therefore, everything became to them like nevela. If you want to get the good taste back, you've got to remove this kind of talk, this evil talk. Secondly, the fact that they introduced bribery into the courts, the Torah tells us that bribery causes blindness. The bribery, graft, blinds the eyes of the wise, which means the judges. Judges who could see the truth, their eyes become blinded by this money that's given to them as graft. This is what spoiled the power of vision. Third, they introduced this pornography, this permissiveness into the land. Through this, the power of smell became destroyed. Became very sadly damaged. Because Tikkun HaBris, the symbol for Tikkun HaBris, is the Reach, the pleasant, pure aroma. The power of Reach, the Samim, spices, is the power of Kedusha of Tikkun HaBris. When there is Chas V'Shalom Chilul HaBris, Sinus, then there is the bad, foul smell. This Rabbeinu Zal tells us, the second Torah, speaking about the tzaddik, Yosef HaTzaddik, who was a symbol of Tikkun HaBris, what was he called? He was called Peiras Yosef, one of beauty. Beauty, what has that got to do with smell? Then it says that the Tikkun HaBris is the Reach Tov, a good smell, because the Zohar HaKadosh says that the tzaddik emes, the tzaddik derives his power from the nostrils. Yinukva de Pardashka. Nostrils means the power of smell, just as the, what is the power of a tzaddik? The neshama, spiritual power. Neshama, the word neshama means breath or smell. And that's why we say, kol neshama tehalako, every neshama soul should bless Hashem. We refer to the power of smell, the bracha on the reyach, the smelling of summer. So this word pardashka is begimatria peiras. Bein peiras Yosef, begimatria the nostrils, showing that the tzaddik emes, Tikkun HaBris, is the power of reyach of smell. Therefore, the betler said to these messengers, if you want to correct these things, go out into the land and get these guilty parties, the servants, the evil servants of this cruel king, and expel them from the kingdom. You'll find that these three sins will become corrected, and the good taste and vision, reyach, will return. Not only that, but you'll suddenly find that the gardener will reappear. The lost gardener will reappear. This they did. They began to correct the land of these three sins, began to search for these evil servants. They would catch someone, and they would arrest and search, which of course is illegal according to an illegal Supreme Court. Halt and search is illegal, but that's because it's illegal, therefore you have all crimes committed. Here they did this, they broke this illegal procedure, and by doing this, they captured all the evil servants of the king. They expelled them, and this way they found that the good was returning. Then, when these were out, and the damage was being repaired, suddenly there was a loud tumult in the city. And the people began to cry out and yell, and they all came to the same realization. All this time, there was one person in the city that was being mocked, jeered at. They would call him the Meshuggah, the insane person, a madman. And they said, now they began to realize perhaps this person they call a madman, Chas V'Shalom, is that lost gardener, but they didn't realize it. So they took him and called him back, and they found that this one that they had been throwing rocks at, making fun of him, which means they got to a point where the tzaddikemis, somebody was nagged at going against him. Worst type of rumors, bad words said against the tzaddikemis. This is found in every generation. Each tzaddikemis, each generation has groups of enemies, misnag them, who talk against them. Time of Baal Shem Tov, Baal Shem HaKadosh, even the great people then strive to put the Baal Shem HaKadosh in Chedem. The brothers of Yosef HaTzadik wanted to kill him or sell him. Time of Rabbeinu Zal, there were so few who realized Rabbeinu Zal's greatness. The other, even the great leaders, were enemies of Rabbeinu Zal. This was the light, the great light that was hidden, the Eter Hanila. Now they said, this person who we all fought against, let's stop and think, this could be the gardener. So they brought this person before them, and they studied him, and they said, true, now we realize, now that our sense of smell and vision and taste has been perfected again, we can now see this is truly the gardener, this is truly the tzaddikemis. With this, everything was correct. So the Betler concluded now the story to the Chassan Kalan said, as a result, we see that I have the consent, the confirmation of that land of wealth, which means all those tzaddikim who were there, they will confirm the fact that I live truly a life of purity and goodness, because I am the one that perfected that land where the gardener was lost. I brought back the knowledge of the tzaddikemis to that country. Therefore, now, he said, I hereby give to you, as a gift, this good life of mine. For this I gave you only a blessing. You should get it. Now I give it to you as a gift. And this resulted in a great, powerful rejoicing. I rejoiced that entire day with this betler. And of course, in the future we'll find that every one of the betlers did the same. They came back, they returned for that day, each one in his turn, and gave as a complete gift that which he had first blessed this young couple with. First one gave them as a gift the long life. Second one gave them as a gift the good life, life of perfection and purity. This was the second day. And note that each one comes on his respective day, which means, of course, it is understood that these are the tzaddikim referring to the sfidos. First one was the sfidos achesed. The second is sfidos gevura. Power, din, the good is in din, the way Hashem wanted to create the world. All that is good. In fact, when we say toiv, toiv is chesed, good. Toiv mi'id, very good, that means real, chayim toiv mi'id, that's din, gevuras. This was the second betler. Benelah goes on now to the third day. Each respective day, a different betler showed up, which means the tzaddikim showed up in a different form, to give them the brachos contained in him from all these seven spheres. The third day, the day began, and when that day began, the couple began to think again. And they reminded themselves about the time they were in the forest, and how the third betler came, the one that stammered, who cannot speak clearly. And they began to yearn for this betler, began to cry, plead, beg, to daven, how can we get this third betler here? Now, while they were davening, while they were crying, shedding tears about this, they reached a high point of emotion. Suddenly he came, and he said, I am here. It was their will, a powerful desire that brought him. A person wants Kedusha strongly enough, he can get it. In fact, the Kedusha will come to him. So it was through their yearning and their tears that this Sadi came to them. And he, not only that, but he showed them such a true avod. The tzaddikemis took them, hugged them, and kissed them, and said to them, I gave you a bracha first to be like me, now I give you a gift also. You think that I am one who stammers, I cannot speak. The fact is, not so. We'll take the story of the third betler the next time, describe his case.